Welcome to Level with Emily Reese. This is music by Swedish composer Simon Wiklund for the game Payday 2. Simon talks about writing music for both Payday games, being the voice for one of the main characters, and getting to write music for a relaunch of sorts of his favorite NES game, Bionic Commando.
The elevator pitch, so to speak, is that it's Left 4 Dead with cops instead of zombies. You play four people together and you're the robbers and you have to take down scores, as they say in the movie Heat. They rob banks and armored vehicles, and it contains all these references to any TV show like Breaking Bad, you know, where we can find something that's how criminals or criminal activities are depicted in pop culture. So we have, you know, you cook meth like they do in Breaking Bad, and they reference these characters from Breaking Bad. And it's all about those, the criminal activities. And then the cops try to stop you, and you just carry out these objectives while trying to survive the onslaught from SWAT teams and whatnot.
And each heist has its own music, right?
Well, in the first game, that's how we did it. So every time you play any particular heist, that will be accompanied by a certain score. But in the second game, we decided that the game randomizes between different pieces of music. While I was still working at Starbreeze, I was championing, you know, adding a feature, which we eventually did, where the player can actually create a playlist and have, like, you know, exclude songs that they don't like and choose before they go into a heist what song or what songs that this playlist could randomize from.
Did you then have a sense for what people were choosing? Were you able to kind of discover the music that they liked the best?
Well, through social media, I've kind of gotten a hint for what people like. And now that the soundtrack, at least the first 15 songs, which is the music that was in the vanilla Payday, so to speak, Payday 2 has been growing since the release in, 3 years ago, in the fall of 2013. So we've added heists and added music as well. But when the game was released, we only had 15 songs on the soundtrack. Okay. So that soundtrack has been released on Spotify. So now it's easy to log on to Spotify for me to and see what songs are the most popular, because they have the most streams.
You mentioned a little bit about how the music changed between the first and second game in terms of, you know, implementation and the fact that game one had heist-specific music and so on. But how else did the music evolve between the first two games for you?
To be honest, it didn't evolve much other than in terms of style. Because the first game, the music was a little bit grittier.
Yeah.
It had more, like, distorted drums and, like, it was more thrashy and more industrial inspired. It leaned more towards harder, more aggressive types of electronic music, like drum and bass and stuff like that. Whereas in the second game, it was implemented the same way. So, you know, when there's a lull between the assault waves, you know, the cops have these assault waves every few minutes, and in the lull between the assault waves, you can kind of carry out the objectives before the assault comes and the game switches over to being more of a fight for survival, so to speak. So the music goes up and down in intensity, and the implementation of the second and the first game are exactly the same ebb and flow in the music as well, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of intensity. So I didn't actually make it any more sophisticated in the sequel, but I leaned the music more towards accessible or broad market types of electronic music, because pop music was borrowing a lot from electronic music like house and stuff like that. So the music in the second game is more inspired by, it's a different type of electronic music. It's still high intensity and, you know, quite aggressive, and it gives that sense of being cool and being in control. And the game has a lot of attitude, and the masks are really, really threatening. And yeah, so the music goes well with all of that. So the change between the first and the second game, I'd say, is more style.
Okay. You also voiced the character of Bane. So how did that come about for you?
Well, chalk that up to the fact that the first game was such a shoestring budget sort of project.
Okay.
And we just figured, like, first we'd save money, and second, it'd be a lot easier for the level designers to make second changes to levels before we release the game, or we release a DLC with a new level, because they can make changes that would require a change in narration, and then I could just record it. We wouldn't have to book a studio and get the voice actor back in the studio and record it, and it would be a hassle. So we just decided I'll do the voice of the guy who guides you through the levels, and it'll be easier from a production point of view and also cheaper. So that's the whole story, really. No one would ever question that we could find a better voice actor. You know, it was just a matter of production making it easier.
Okay, you're ready for the next step. Slinging BS like a boss.
Yeah, but people love you. They love the Bane character, and he's such an integral part of the game. I love that you did that.
I don't know. I just played straight for the most part, you know, and there's just a few places in the game where we actually let Bane kind of lose his temper or convey that he's stressed out or something like that, because the idea when we created the character was that he would be a counterpart to the stress that all the robbers feel, because they're in the middle of the action. They have the bullets whizzing by their ears, and they're in the middle of the shootout, whereas Bane is sitting, you know, off site somewhere else, and he's just in contact with those guys through earpieces.
Mm-hmm.
So he would never curse. He would always keep his cool. He would just say what they're supposed to do and be kind of the calm center of the storm, so to speak.
No! We were so goddamn close! I don't see how it could have gone this way. But I'm only human.
You were one of the founders of Overkill Software in Stockholm. So can you tell me how all of that started?
Yeah, we were, I think, 8 guys who had all worked at Grin, which was a game development company. I worked there from the beginning all the way until the bankruptcy in 2009. Not even 2 months after the bankruptcy, we had found another office, and we just decided the 8 of us will start another company. And in the beginning, because apps were kind of growing back then. This was in 2009, late 2009. So smartphones had been established, but it wasn't as big, obviously, as it is today. So we thought maybe apps is the way to go. And we started developing ideas and actually developing some software as well based on those ideas. But we never got to the point where anything was approved by Apple. So before we even got anything out the door, we just decided, nah, let's do games again. Let's do proper PC games. And Ulf, who was the kind of creative mastermind in the group, he just came one day and said, here's the elevator pitch. What do you guys say about Left 4 Dead with cops instead of zombies? And everyone was like, that's brilliant. Why hasn't, I mean, it's such a, there's so many games where it's like aliens versus space marines, or there's, you know, Nazis versus allies. You have all these classic, you know, conflicts, but cops versus robbers, there's very few games that actually do anything with that.
Right.
You have, maybe it's Kane and Lynch is one. And of course, you have the GTA series that kind of dips into that world every once in a while with robbers and things like that happening, even though the game as a whole is not. Yeah, it's a different beast. But we thought that there haven't been enough games with that thing, so we should do something. And it turned out to be, I mean, it's perfect in terms of, like, everything. People can cosplay as the characters very easily, and you have a mask on, you can kind of hide behind that mask. And game design as well, a lot of ideas came, you know, just out of sheer, you know, logic. Like, yeah, you should take hostages, and the hostages have to, you should be able to trade hostages when you're in need of something that the police can give you. Everything just kind of clicked. The success of the franchise, I think, is a testament to how brilliant the idea is and how much of a gap it kind of represented in the game world.
And when did Starbreeze buy Overkill? And that happened because of Payday, right?
Yeah, I suppose. It was in 2012. That was during the development of Payday 2. So we had already kind of, you know, started developing Payday 2, and we were kind of running out of money because the first Payday game was a success, like successful enough to warrant a sequel. But Overkill still was a really small developer with not a lot of, you know, funding, not a lot of liquidity. So we had greater opportunities with the money and the finances that Starbreeze could help out with.
I'm curious how you got your start musically and what kind of got you into games in the first place?
Oh, I got into games. I'm born in 79, so my first experience with games was the NES back in the 80s. Played a lot of Super Mario Brothers and all those classic games, Capcom games, Bionic Commando, which I later became, I was the creative director of the remake of Bionic Commando, which was a dream come true. So I played all these like Mega Man and stuff back in the 80s. And I think I played 8-bit Nintendo, and then it was PC during the 90s. And then in the 2000s, I actually got back into consoles with GameCube and some stuff. So I played games all my life, more or less. And then I grew up in a musical family where my father plays like saxophone and mandolin and clarinet and all kinds of violin and stuff. And my mother plays the piano. So I took violin lessons when I was a little kid, and later on I took piano lessons, and I got a guitar while I was in high school. I had a ponytail too, so I was that guy. And then I listened to a lot of rock, like I was all into grunge, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and stuff. And then Prodigy was the band that kind of got me into electronic music, because they kind of bridged that gap between rock and alternative music and electronic music. And they kind of, that kind of got me hooked on drum loops and distorted 303 synthesizers and stuff like that. I started making electronic music in high school with Fast Tracker, which was one of those cheap, primitive music making softwares. Yeah, that's how I started. And then I went to high school and met Ulf there. And we really hit it off with, you know, they had the same humor, and we had the same, we liked games, and we went to art school together. So we became friends, and then he founded Grin with his older brother. And I asked, maybe I can do the music for whatever game you guys are making. And they said that they already had a guy that they had decided should make the music. And I said, maybe I can. No, actually, they said, make a few demos. And if you're good enough, maybe we can let you do the music together with this guy. You can collaborate, or you can do a few songs for the game or whatever. And yeah. I made a few demos, and they liked it so much that they kicked the other guy out. And so since then, it's been, I made the music actually for all Grin games throughout their entire lifespan, the entire lifespan of that company, except for the Ghost Recon games, because they were, what's the company?
Is it Ubisoft?
Ubisoft, exactly.
Yeah.
So they had already hired Tom Salta, which is a famous composer.
Oh, yeah.
So he made the music for them. So I did only the sound design for the PC version of the Ghost Recon games. But otherwise, I made a lot of music for the Grin games.
And now you're freelance, and you did that last year, right? You decided to go freelance?
Exactly, yeah.
And how has that been going?
Wonderful. It's lovely. I meet my wife a lot more, which is a huge plus. I can work from home and kind of decide when to work and when to be free. And it works out really, really great. Also, I can still do jobs for Starbreeze, and that's worked out great. I think they still see it as that my music is so entwined with whatever Petey is, you know. So they've still asked me to continue composing the music. So I've done a lot of work for DLC heists that have been released since I left the company, and also for the trailers, live action trailers and animated trailers and stuff. So that's been great. And also I've been tying some connections to new companies, and I've done some freelance work for others as well. And I'm just finishing up. Actually, earlier today, I was sitting and working on the soundtrack release for Pan Pan, which is the latest game I've been working on and did the music and sound effects for.
Have you always been into doing sound design as well? Did you do sound effects on a lot of other projects too?
Yeah, all the way from 2000 to 2007 or something, I was the only one in charge of audio, anything audio related at Grin.
So
I did all the sound design, all the music for all games up until that point, except for the music for Ghost Recon again.
Sure.
But yeah, I did sound design, a lot of sound design for all the games. And then Grin became such a big company, and I was working with a smaller team within the company on the Bionic Commando Rearmed game as a creative director, and I did the music as well. I didn't do the sound design for that game, and then we had two other full-time composers in the company, in-house composers working on the music for all the other games that we were making, and they were Wanted, Weapons of Fate, and the Terminator Salvation game, and also the 3D, not remake, but the AAA sort of sequel to Bionic Commando, the bigger game, so to speak. That wasn't a remake.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the music for that stuff. But when we restarted again and became like we came from Grin, which was like 260 maybe people, and it went bankrupt, and we restarted, and we were eight guys again.
Wow.
It was, you know, back to basics in terms of, you know, everyone had to wear different hats and several hats, whereas in the larger company you can have more specialized people, you know. So I had to go back to being composer and sound designer. So I did all the sound design, directed all the voice actors for the first Payday game, did all the music and implemented all the music and the sounds and stuff. So that was a lot of work. But I wasn't married. I didn't have a girlfriend back then, so that kind of worked because
of that.
How could you have?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be the same game if that was the case. But yeah, and then for the second game, the company grew a little bit, so I didn't have to work on the sound design anymore, and I continued working purely on the music for the sequel. ¶¶
Is that your preference would be to focus just on the music, or did you kind of enjoy certain aspects of sound design as well?
Oh yeah, I enjoy sound design as well, but the project has to challenge me or be interesting in some way. Now I'm kind of hungering for, you know, something scary, like a horror game or something would be fun. And people who worked in, at Grin from the very beginning would actually remember that every meeting that we had in the company, I would, like, when they came to the, okay, any questions before we, you know, go back to work? And I would always raise my hand and ask, when are we doing a horror game? And that would be like a running joke. But I've actually never done a proper horror game. So that would be super interesting, both in terms of sound design and music, of course. But yeah, I love sound design as well. And I became really interested in doing the sound design as well as the music for this game, Pan Pan, because I saw the love that went into it. It's only one guy. Eamon Banner is his name, and he made all the game design and all the graphics and animations and programmed everything. So he created the game all by himself, and it's really like a labor of love. And I thought that, yeah, I can't just do the music, you know? And they asked me to do the music and the sound design, and I thought I cannot not do the sound design. And I think I found something in having really atmospheric music without drums, which is something quite new to me, because most of the music I'm known for is very like adrenaline, you know, high intensity, and it's a lot of drum loops and stuff like that. So this music is extremely, you know, in the opposite direction. And then the sound effects are really distinct and short and dry, and they kind of contrast with the music in a really nice way.
Oh, interesting. When does that game come out?
I think it's coming out the end of this month, at the end of August.
What drew you to that project? How did you find out about it?
I was actually asked by the company that are publishing the game, which is Might and the Light. And this company was founded by some old colleagues from Grin, most of who had worked on Bionic Commando Rearmed. They felt that they had something special. So when Grin went bankrupt, they started a new company and thought that, well, we can make, you know, something new together. And Might and the Light's first game was PID, Planet in Distress. So okay. That was a really cute but very difficult platforming game. And they've carved out a very interesting niche in the industry, I think, with these games visually really interesting. And they have a super interesting approach to gameplay as well, where it's like an experience, and it's a very emotional and not just, you know, they're different games. And they saw the potential in this game, Pan Pan, that had been developed outside of their company by this guy. And they thought that they could publish it. And the only thing that the game was missing was sound effects and music. So then they went to me and asked me if I wanted to do it. And I was like, I looked at the game and I was like blown away by the level of craftsmanship and everything. And I couldn't believe that one guy had made, you know, all the animations and all the graphics and the visual style and everything was so unique and compelling. So I could not say no.
You've mentioned working on Bionic Commando Rearmed a couple of times, and this is another soundtrack of yours that people seem to really love and respond to. So you also said it was kind of like a dream come true to work on that game. So talk to me a little bit about that process.
It was described to me, the idea was Capcom's from the beginning, because the plan was already, like, Grin had been hired by Capcom to develop the AAA kind of interpretation of the franchise or of the brand. So that game was going to come out in 2009. But within Capcom, they wanted to release a remake of the original game, like a side-scroller version of it, to remind people of the original game so that the AAA adventure take on it wouldn't just come out of nowhere. So a remake would be released a year or something in advance to remind people who had forgotten about the original game and also introduce people who didn't know about the original game. And Capcom's first intention was to hire another company than Grin. And then within Grin, they said, no, let Grin do it and we'll do a great job for those reasons. then they, within the company, they came to me and asked me, we know you love the original game. Would you like to be the creative director of the small team that we'll have developing this remake that will be released in advance of the AAA title? And I was like, I will cut off my arm, you know, to be a part of this. So I jumped at the chance, and it became maybe 10, 12 months. I don't know. It was horrific in many ways. And it was really tough on my social life and my hygiene and everything. Everything had to stand aside for this game to be as good as it could be. And it turned out great. And it was released in August of 2008, around the same time as Braid and Castle Crashers. And together with Braid and Castle Crashers, I think that Bionic Commando Rearmed was one of those games that really set the bar from that day forward. Because Xbox Live was becoming a thing, and PlayStation Network, and mm-hmm. at that time it was mostly like, you know, Tetris and puzzle game kind of hybrids, and
yeah,
you know, it felt like the kind of game you would play on your cell phone, but you could play them on your TV. And those games, Castle Crashers and Braid and Bionic Commando Rearmed, kind of, you know, raised the bar mm-hmm. and showed everyone that, you know, those downloadable titles for the consoles can be, you know, something very special too. It was a great experience, and I would do it again if I relived my life, but it was horrible in many ways as well. I remember I couldn't even go home sometimes. I had actually had one of those folding beds at the office.
Wow.
And then I could never go home and actually wash my clothes. So I would just, dirty laundry would go into bags under my desk, and then I would go out on lunch and buy new underwear and socks t-shirts. And when they became dirty, they went into the laundry basket, and I just purchased new clothes because I didn't have time to actually, you know, do the laundry.
I'm curious what kinds of music inspires you and what other kinds of music you like to create.
Recently, I've been listening to classical music more. Not so much the classical composers, but, you know, music that's more like film music. And because I kind of envy the people who can actually compose and record and mix that type of music, because it's really mind-boggling how you piece it all together, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Trailer music, you know, getting that huge sound and all the brass and all the epic horns and strings and stuff. Then it's pop music. I love pop music as well. So I can dig Ariana Grande as much as I can dig, you know, Pearl Jam, which was what I preferred back in my teens. If I would travel back in time and tell myself that in the future I would listen to pop music, I would never believe it, because back then that was the devil. And anyone who made pop music had sold their soul to the devil of the music industry. But now I can really, really appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into writing a hook and a mm-hmm. good, you know, a pop song. Mm-hmm. And the producers are just brilliant, you know.
Aren't there a lot of Swedish producers who write lot of, for American American stars? Isn't that kind of a thing?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You got Max Martin and Shellback are two of the most famous ones, I'd say. Max Martin has been doing it since the mid-90s, and Shellback is his new protege. And they're writing music for Pink and for Ariana Grande and for all these different artists. And there's many others in Sweden. And it's a huge, like, we have actually education for it as well. So people
really?
Who have made it in the industry have started schools and are trying to pass on their knowledge to people who are interested in pursuing that career. So it's, exporting music is a big thing, not just artists, but songwriters as well and
right.
music producers in Sweden.
Right.
If you compare it to the size of the country or the population, it's a really big thing in Sweden.
One of the things that I neglected to ask earlier that I would like to know, because you talked about how you took violin lessons and you play guitar and piano, what else have you picked up along the way? Because I'm sure that there's other things that you play.
I wouldn't call myself a bassist, but you know, if you know how a guitar works, you can kind of play the bass as well. You know where the notes
yeah.
are, and you can kind of, so I can play the bass. I would never stand on a stage and actually, you know, try to play the bass live, but all the music I make is mostly, I mean, I can get away with just recording. If I can play the riff tight or tight-ish once, I can loop it, you know? And I can correct anything. If it's tight-ish, I can make it tight by actually, you know, cutting and pasting in the software. So I come across as a better guitarist and a better bassist and a better singer or whatever than I actually am in my productions because the software allows it. But yeah, it's piano, guitar, a little bit of bass, and I sing as well.
Yeah, you do sing. And where can I hear you sing, though?
It started out in the first Payday game. We wanted, there was this heist that took place in a skyscraper at the top of, it was supposed to be a little bit like the movie Die Hard, where there's this office party, and then the robbers take the partygoers hostage, and they're supposed to get into a vault somewhere in that skyscraper. So you're the robbers, you and your friends are the robbers, and you take these people hostage. And we wanted to have music at the party. So I made this song on my spare time that was supposed to sound like something Swedish House Mafia or some house kind of, you know, pop hybrid of some sort.
Yeah.
So it needed vocals. So I sang the vocals and we put it on the soundtrack, that song. And it's supposed to sound like something that we licensed, but it's not. It's actually written specifically for the game. That became kind of a tradition in the sequel when we started doing all these trailers for new DLC and new expansions for Payday 2. At that point, the company was so big when Starbreeze had bought Overkill that we actually had a cinematic team that were making these teaser trailers and short films and stuff to commemorate or to show off the new releases and the new stuff that was coming. It was weapon packs and it was new characters and it was new heists and all these, you know, updates and stuff. And they would ask me to do music, again, that would sound like something that they had licensed when in fact it was written specifically tailored for the trailer or whatever. So that was some of the most fun projects actually I've been working on, music projects, doing all these trailers.
It has to be Christmas for you to be nice. You're an asshole if you think the season is the reason. You're a piece of shit. If someone has to dress up like Santa, or you won't back a fun race, then you're a low life fucking dick.
Two trailers contain country music. So
yeah.
I wrote two different country songs, and that's my voice on both of those songs.
I left my favorite cassette in the escape car. I'll never hear those songs again. It made me think of all the many things I've sacrificed. Oh mama, where do I begin? When I
You released an album earlier this year on Bandcamp called Orbot, which I absolutely adore. I think it's great. It's super fun. So tell me a little bit about why you decided to toss that up there.
Yeah, those are six tracks that I've, I think the oldest one I started working on in 2009. So they're really, you know, a long time in the making. And so much happened during those 5 or 6 years that I worked on those songs. I learned so many tricks in terms of, production and stuff. So in the beginning, they were great songs. I could hear the melodies and the harmonies were really, you know, catchy. And I liked the synthesizer sounds and stuff, but they weren't well produced. So they were too good to not release, but too bad to release in that state. And from 2009 to now, I actually, you know, made the transition from one type of music production software to another. And then I have to bring those tracks over to the new software. I had to, export all the stems individually and mix the songs anew, so to speak, in the new software. And of course, that's a hassle, but also it gives the opportunity with all the, you know, the nice features that this new software has. So it was a long, you know, I would work on weekends every once in a while. And so I have obviously haven't been working on those songs for, you know, constantly for 5, 6 years. But I don't even know what the style is. It's not house. And it's some kind of electronic music. And it's very, like, melodic and bleep. I think it's obvious when you listen to it that I've been inspired by Mega Man and all these old school, like, Nintendo games, because it has that kind of primitive synthesizer sound to it, but at the same time it's produced to be very modern with deep, you know, distorted bass lines, and so it's quite aggressive. Yeah, it's just the type of music that I love doing, and there was no game that it was for. It's very game inspired, but it was just, you know, I had to get it out the door somehow. And I have more songs like that are on my hard drive that probably will be released as it'll be in the next EP that'll be released at some point. Anyone who's interested in hearing it I think you can listen to it on Bandcamp for free.
I have really enjoyed speaking with you today, and thank you so much for spending so much time with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Lovely speaking with you.
Thanks for listening to episode 34 of Level with Emily Rees. You can learn more about Simon Vicklund at patreon.com/level. And also at patreon.com/level, you can support us by becoming a patron for as little as $1 a month. I'm Emily Rees. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Level with Emily, and learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Remember, June is J-O-O-N.